Tango Tango Papa 1940, December 15, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Emporia, Kansas. So, you're getting another podcast in a row. I haven't done this in a long time because I have more feedback. I've got a little bit of feedback that I got via, when I was chatting with a listener via Messenger, Facebook Messenger. And I've also got an audio comment from Mike. And so let's see. Let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and play the audio comment from Mike first and then respond to it and go from there. So here is Mike.
Hey, Tom. I hope all is well. One thing that's been on my mind for the last year or two, and just a source of frustration, is just some of the selfishness we see out there in society. One measure of that that I happen to witness on a daily basis is just how drivers interact with each other. And I'm sure that you know a lot more about this than I do. But just driving around my city, it's become commonplace. It seems like more and more so over the last few years than it did 20 years ago to see people, you know, blocking intersections, taking, you know, going through an intersection on a red and blocking other drivers who, you know, need to go straight. And then you might sit through one or two revolutions while people just are parked right in the intersection in front of you because they ran a red and don't necessarily care about you and your ability to move forward. The other thing I see is, you know, people parking in wheelchair spots that don't even have wheelchair or handicapped signs on their rearview mirrors and obviously aren't handicapped. I see people using a lot of the EBT, you know, cards, the welfare cards, getting food and groceries. My daughter actually works at a large grocery chain and sees this happening a lot with, you know, 20-year-olds using them and getting a lot of food. And then sometimes they even get frustrated if their card's out of money and leave everything on the belt and just walk away. The other day, just this weekend, I was at Walmart, doing some Christmas shopping. I was getting my granddaughter out of my truck and a teenager in a large lifted 4x4 truck just floored it in between, you know, all the parking spots. He felt like he had to go 0 to 50 through the parking lot just to show off, I guess. And he could have easily ran down any pedestrian. And it's just, I just see this change going on more and more these days, and it seems more predominant than it did 10, 15, or 20 years ago. And I'm just wondering what's going on, so I thought you could comment on that. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Mike. What you're talking about there is sort of a general sign or a general side effect, evidence of the breakdown. Really, it goes back to the breakdown of the family, of the so-called nuclear family unit, and that's really what it's revolving around, and you end up with obviously lack of discipline, and even among families that are still intact, a lot of those, as far as the family unit goes and the way that the family unit functions, bear little or probably very little resemblance to what their ancestors, you go back, let's say, two or three generations worth of ancestors, families, their great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents wouldn't recognize the family unit that kind of exists today. They wouldn't believe that it, you know, that it probably that it could deteriorate that way. But it's mostly a result of spoiled, you know, people have been spoiling their kids. And this goes back to the, you know, it really started in earnest in probably the 1940s. After World War II, I've talked about this before, the, you know, the guys won the war, Greatest Generation, came back and it won the war, and the economy started booming in a big way. And they had their families and their houses and started manufacturing all kinds of things and buying things. And in the meantime, they utterly, to a large extent, failed to transmit their value system to the children. They, you know, the generation that won World War II, many of them came from really hard backgrounds as far as economic times go. And so they really had, their parents really had to struggle in order to raise them. And so they came back and they, you know, people naturally say, well, I want, or they seem to, they, I want my kids to have more than I did. Now, there's a that's an admirable idea, I suppose. But the problem is that if you just start willy-nilly giving your kids things and you don't teach them the value of working, or the, and you sort of end up robbing them of the dignity of earning it themselves, you end up with sort of everything is about me. So there's this idea that everything is about me, the world revolves around me, I'm special, I'm important. And of course, it, the, you know, and then today, the you know, the, you really throw the just horribly corrupted public school system into the mix, and you end up with what you're describing. And it's probably, I don't know, I would say that as far as the self-centeredness, that's probably as worse than it's ever been before among the, you know, especially the younger generation, at least in certain quarters. Now, that when I say this, you also have to understand that it's the best of times for some people, and it's the worst of times for others. And that's, I think that's always true. And it's true right up until this moment. About half of the country, it seems like, is just lost. It seems like half of the population is just out of control. But then on the other hand, you have, you may not hear about them very much, but there's still a lot of people that are doing a good job raising their kids, and they're not raising selfish kids, they're teaching their kids values, they're teaching their kids how to work, but you don't hear about those. All you really hear about are the bad ones, and of course the bad ones end up sticking out. And if you're living in a large city, then depending on, you know, you're probably going to see the problem ones. You know, those are the ones that are really going to stick out. Then the other problem, you put a bunch of especially people together, but selfish people together, you kind of cram them all together, and then you start seeing bad behavior emerge. And I see this in even truck stop parking lots. I see people being, you know, drivers that you wouldn't think would be aggressive. All of a sudden, they'll try cutting in front of somebody if the, let's say the I'm trying to get fuel, and there's been a few, you know, every once in a while I'll be in a fuel stop and the thing will just be jammed up, and, you know, with people trying to get fuel all at the same time. And you may have two or three trucks lined up behind each fuel island waiting for the truck ahead to move so that they can advance. And so then sometimes I'll see people that they'll just cut right in front, you know, because, I think in their own minds they think they're more important. But that's usually not the rule. It's more the rule as a mostly what I see is people being courteous, and that seems to be the, you know, what dominates. But I do see bad behavior. And the bad behavior becomes worse in really cramped quarters. Then I start to see really bad behaviors begin to emerge, more aggressive behavior, and you know, kind of more chaotic behavior. So, but. Yeah, the real problem kind of goes back to the what parents have been doing, sort of failing their children, and then it's gotten really to epidemic levels. And so I don't know how does it correct itself. I don't know. At some point, I think we go beyond the point of no return. What I tell people is to, you know, just get out of cities. You don't want to, you know, don't want to live in a big city, because who knows what could happen. I think if we continue down the path that we're on, and we seem to be accelerating right now, I think that we're going to start seeing. You think we've had problems, you think 9/11 was a big event? Just wait. Because if you go back to the biblical story of ancient Israel, basically they had a warning. They had an initial warning hey, something's wrong. You know, you're going in the wrong direction. God basically warned them. And they sort of didn't heed the warning. You know, we're going to rebuild and it's going to be better. And so a period of time went by, and then cities began to disappear, entire cities. And so what could happen? You know, you pick a major city, you know, the big targets, New York City. What if somebody sets off a nuclear bomb in New York City, or Washington, D.C.? Or how about Los Angeles is also another target? Those are gigantic targets. And that's, you may think, oh, well, that could never happen. Well, yes, it can. You know, look at what we're doing with the open borders. So, something's going to happen, but these people that are really the ones that are really selfish, especially kids, you know, at some point they may have to grow up. At some point, it's possible that, you know, people can be, you know, kind of on the wrong path. People can, you know, human beings can be redeemed. We have that. We always have that potential. So, are all of them going to be, you know, turn around and become better citizens? Probably not. But some of them do have the potential to. And what can end up bringing that about is suffering. And, you know, some people, once they're literally or figuratively completely in the gutter, you know, all of a sudden they've tried everything, and all of a sudden they start having rational thoughts. Because they've tried everything else and it didn't work, and so becoming rational is the only thing left. And they can improve. But some people just die in the gutter. So there are a lot of people that are kind of end up being supported by the people that are basically continuing to spoil them, continuing to give them money. And of course it starts out in families, and then the government takes over with the parents failing. The government just kind of takes over and continues to enable it in many cases. You know, you're describing the 20 year olds with the EBT cards. And I've seen the same thing you're talking about, you know, where they're walking off and just kind of leave the stuff on the belt at the checkout. You know, because it's all about them after all. You know, so. But on the other hand, what do you do about that? Don't, you know, when you see something like that, how do you protect yourself from that? Because that's a toxic behavior. You have toxic people, as I was talking about that a few days ago, the toxic behavior. How do you protect yourself from toxic people? You know, even though you're not, you know, you just happen to be there. How do you protect yourself? Well, you do it by not resenting them. You know, you can witness the bad behavior, and they may even try. A lot of times people will try to get to see if they're going to get sympathy from other people. Or they're looking for, oftentimes people are looking for some reaction. And if you just kind of, I've found that sometimes if I just, I'm standing there and I'm naturally not reacting, it kind of bothers them sometimes. It's interesting how that works. So, but I see a lot of bad behavior from time to time. Not every day, but I do see it, you know, in truck stops, you know, where people will be rude to, like let's say, for example, in a restaurant. Yeah, people that are really, all of a sudden, they're really rude with a waitress or whatever because they didn't get their way. And I've seen this happen with older people. It's not necessarily just younger people. But I've seen it happen with older ones as well. And so, the way I deal with it is to not resent it. And then, you know, I'm able to observe it. Observe the bad behavior, but I don't end up becoming sort of poisoned by it. Because that resenting it, you know, there's this, people think that, oh, if I resent something, that, you know, that somehow it's going to hurt whatever it is that I resent. No, it's not. It's exactly the opposite. When you resent something, it just makes you more absorbent. It makes you absorb the behavior. And then once you've resented something, you got two wrong choices. You can either try to rebel and do the opposite, or you'll find yourself repeating the behavior. You become what you resent. You become what you hate. You know, so if you resent somebody that has some sort of bully behavior, you're going to end up becoming under a compulsion to become the bully yourself. A lot of that goes on. So lots and lots of toxic people. So my suggestion is to go to my website and click on that link that says meditation and really give that a try and practice that. Because that, if you can learn to the proper way of being still, be still, a line from the Bible, be still and know that I'm God. That's God talking to us. Learn how to, the proper way of being still, find out what that means, to that proper way of being still, then you can be in the world and even interact with the world, but you don't become of the world. Because there's a, if you think of it as pressure, you have this external pressure from the world around you, and of course that pressure wants you to become worldly. But there's also, if you can learn to be still, there's this internal pressure, and if you can really learn to be still in the right way, find out what that means, then that internal pressure becomes the dominant pressure. And then, you know, but we often recognize that pressure as a guilty conscience. It's somehow it's bothering us. But if you can get past that and kind of allow the guilt pressure to sort of catch up with you and overwhelm you, then and deal with it properly without resenting it, then that pressure can become your friend. And you can literally sort of be in the world, but not of the world. As far as your identity goes. And as far as your sense of right and wrong goes. And as far as your sense of common sense goes. But there's lots of people that, you know, since we've managed to sort of purge God out of our society, purge any kind of religion out of our society, our society is sort of it's dominated by the religion. It's really a religion of secular fundamentalism. And so then the idea is that everything's physical, and, you know, we kind of discount the spiritual. We're just going to discount that. It's all about the physical existence. And so if your society's dominated by the idea that everything is physical and physical existence, and that's all there is, then what are you going to end up with? You're going to end up with cowards, because why would they fight? They don't want to hurt themselves. After all, they might die or become injured and die, and this physical existence is all there is, so they got to protect themselves. You know, we see this obsession with safety. You know, make the little kids wear the bicycle helmets and all that stuff. Our society is just obsessed with being safe. But at the same time, you end up with a sort of a cowardice that ends up permeating the entire society. And then, of course, that also leads, if it's all about me and this is the only existence that I have, then who cares about other people? You know, who cares about that? I want to be comfortable. I want to have what I want. I want what I want. I'll do whatever I have to do to get it. And ethics be damned. I'm going to do what I'm going to do to get whatever it is that I want. Whatever I can get away with is the mentality. And of course, that leads to destruction. That leads to a very negative place. If you live your life that way, you know, it's all about your physical existence. It ends in a really miserable place. You know, if it's all about, if you live your life all about how you feel, you want your, you know, good feelings, you know, you're going to, good chance that you're going to end up with all kinds of illnesses, because you're sort of wallowing around in perverted emotions, emotions that, you know, you've made them much more than what they were supposed to be. And you screw your immune system all up and end up with all kinds of diseases and God knows what else, maladies, and good luck, because you're going to need it. So, anyway, thank you, Mike, for the comment. So I've got, let's see what else I have here. I've got the comment from that I got through Facebook Messenger, and this is from Mark. He says, feedback trivia note regarding Santa. Santa Claus is another linguistic form of the words Saint Nicholas. Think of a four-year-old girl trying to say Saint Nicholas. It might come out as Santa Claus. The mouth and tongue roughly make the same motions. Similar with the pronunciation of American, the Spanish pronunciation of Mexico, which would be Mexico. There was also no existence of a Christmas Saint Nicholas until Twas the Night Before Christmas poem was published in Saturday Evening Post. So I've got Wikipedia, and I've got the Santa Claus entry. So we'll just read through this. Let's see here. Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, St. Nick, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Santy, or Santa, is a figure with legendary, historical, and folkloric origins in many Western cultures, is said to bring gifts to the homes of good children on 24 December, the night before Christmas Day. The modern figure of Santa Claus is derived from the British figure of Father Christmas, the Dutch figure of Sinterklaas, and Saint Nicholas, the historical Greek bishop and gift giver of Myra. During the Christianization of Germanic Europe, this figure may also have absorbed elements of the god Odin, who was associated with the Germanic pagan midwinter event of Yule and led the wild hunt, a ghostly procession through the sky. Santa Claus is generally depicted as a portly, joyous, white-bearded man, sometimes with spectacles, wearing a red coat with white collar, handcuffs, white-cuffed red trousers, and black leather belt and boots, and who carries a bag full of gifts for children. Images of him rarely have a beard with no mustache. The image became popular in the United States and Canada in the 19th century due to the significant influence of the 1823 poem A Visit from St. Nicholas and the caricaturist and political cartoonist Thomas Nast. This image has been maintained and reinforced through song, radio, television, children's book, and film. Since the 20th century, in an idea popularized by the 1934 song Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Santa Claus has been believed to make a list of children throughout the world, so he's sort of like Big Brother, categorizing them according to their behavior, naughty or nice, Big Brother, and to deliver presents, including toys and candy, to all the well-behaved children in the world, and sometimes coal to the naughty children, on the single night of Christmas Eve. He accomplishes this feat with the aid of elves who make the toys in the workshop, and the flying reindeer who pull his sleigh. He is commonly portrayed as living at the North Pole and saying ho 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 often. Predecessor figures, Father Christmas. Father Christmas dates back as far as the 16th century in England during the reign of Henry VIII, when he was pictured as a large man in green or scarlet robes lined with fur. He typified the spirit of good cheer at Christmas, bringing peace, joy, good food, and wine and revelry. As England no longer kept the feast day of St. Nicholas on 6 December, the Father Christmas celebration was moved to 25 December to coincide with Christmas Day. The Victorian revival of Christmas included Father Christmas as the emblem of good cheer. His physical appearance was variable, with one famous image being John Leech's illustration of the Ghost of Christmas Present in Charles Dickens' festive classic A Christmas Carol of 1843. As a great genial man in a green coat lined with fur who takes Scrooge through the bustling streets of London on the current Christmas morning, sprinkling the essence of Christmas onto the happy populace. Father Christmas is now widely seen as synonymous with the Santa Claus figure. Saint Nicholas of Myra was a 4th century Greek Christian bishop of Myra, now Demre, in Lycia, Lycia, a province of the Byzantine Empire, now in Turkey. Nicholas was famous for his generous gifts to the poor, in particular presenting the 3 impoverished daughters of a pious Christian with dowries, so that they would not have to become prostitutes. He was very religious from an early age and devoted his life entirely to Christianity in continental Europe, more precisely the Netherlands, Belgium, Austria, and Germany. He is usually portrayed as a bearded bishop in canonical robes. The remains of St. Nicholas are in Italy. In 1087, the Italian city of Bari, B-A-R-I, mounted an expedition to locate the tomb of the saint. The reliquary of St. Nicholas was conquered by Italian sailors, and his relics were taken to Bari, where they are kept to this day. A basilica was constructed the same year to store and the loot, and the area became a pilgrimage site for the devout. Sailors from Bari collected just half of St. Nicholas's skeleton, leaving all the minor fragments in the grave. These were collected by Venetian sailors during the First Crusade and taken to Venice, where a church to St. Nicholas, the patron of sailors, was built on the St. Nicolai at Lido, Al Lido. This tradition was confirmed in 2 important scientific investigations of the relics in Bari and Venice, which revealed that the relics in the 2 Italian cities belonged to the same skeleton. St. Nicholas was later claimed as a patron saint of the many diverse groups, from archers, sailors, and children to pawnbrokers. He is also the patron saint of both Amsterdam and Moscow. During the Middle Ages, often on the evening before his name day of 6 December, children were bestowed with gifts in his honor. The date was earlier than the original day of gifts for the children, which moved in the course of the Reformation and its opposition to the veneration of saints in many countries on the 24th and 25th December. So St. Nicholas changed to Santa Claus. The custom of gifting of children at Christmas has been propagated by Martin Luther as an alternative to the previous very popular gift custom on St. Nicholas, to focus the interest of the children to Christ instead of the veneration of saints. Martin Luther first suggested the Christ kind as the bringer of gifts, but Nicholas remained popular as the gifts bearer for the people. Dutch and Belgian folklore. In the Netherlands and Belgium, the character of Saint Nicholas has to compete with that of Sinterklaas, Santa's presumed progenitor. Santa Claus is known as De Kerstman in Dutch, or the Christmas Man, and Père Noël, Father Christmas in French, but for children in the Netherlands, since Sinterklaas remains the predominant gift giver in December. 36% of Dutch only give presents on Sinterklaas Day, whereas Christmas is used by another 21% to give presents. Some 26% of Dutch population gives presents on both days. In Belgium, Sinterklaas Day presents are offered exclusively to children, whereas on Christmas Day, all ages may receive presents. Sinterklaas assistants are called Zwarte Pieten in Dutch, something. So they are not elves. I can't pronounce that. Germanic paganism, Odin, and Christianization. Prior to Christianization, the Germanic peoples, including the English, celebrated a midwinter event called Yule. Old English Gjola or Gili, no, I'm not pronouncing those properly. With the Christianization of Germanic Europe, numerous traditions were absorbed from Yuletide celebrations into modern Christmas. During this period, supernatural and ghostly occurrences were said to increase in frequencies, such as the wild hunt, a ghostly procession through the sky. The leader of the wild hunt is frequently attested as the god Odin, and he bears the Old Norse names Jolnir, J-O-L-N-I-R, meaning Yule figure, and the name, I can't pronounce that, meaning long beard. The god Odin's role during Yuletide period has been theorized as having influenced concepts of St. Nicholas in a variety of facets, including his long white beard and his gray horse for the nightly rides, which was traded for reindeer in North America. Margaret Baker comments that the appearance of Santa Claus or Father Christmas, whose day is 25 of December, owes much to Odin, the old blue-hooded, cloaked, white-bearded gift-bringer of the North, who rode the midwinter sky on his 8-footed steed, visiting his people with gifts. Odin transformed into Father Christmas, then Santa Claus, prospered with Saint Nicholas, and the Christ child became a leading player on the Christmas stage. So this kind of goes on and on and on, and so I don't know, this has some this goes on, boy, that's a long article. So this kind of goes on and on and on, and there's, you know, it has a lot of pagan origins to it. You know, and then on the other hand, you also have some, there are some real manipulative elements to it as well. You know, and I think that, I don't think it was deliberately designed necessarily to be manipulative, but I think that, many parents have probably sort of taken advantage of it, seeing the manipulative possibilities. You know, it's like Santa, instead of, you know, God, you know, is watching all of us. God knows what God knows our thoughts. He knows us very, you know, much more intimately than we have any clue. But, you know, so then the idea is, well, Santa Claus is, you know, knows all, and he knows if you've been naughty or nice, and he's either going to reward you or punish you. You know, and that sounds awfully familiar. Except it's kind of a fantasy, man-made fantasy version. So I don't know, but all of these things, it's very interesting. What I find most interesting is even pagan rituals, the origins of them often kind of parallel even stories that, you know, that we see in the Bible. Sort of what we know is, you know, kind of know is right and wrong. Different types of behavior. You see, these pagan rituals would that sort of end up becoming codified by different cultures. Often, you know, there's some real similarities from one culture to the next, which is, you know, that's also interesting. So, I don't know. As I was saying last night, the Christmas thing, it's probably is fine. If I had kids, and I don't, but I would just tell the kids, hey, this is our tradition. This is, you know, we have a Christmas tree, and we've got this, the idea of Santa Claus, and, you know, and the reindeer and all of that. And it's not real. You know, don't try to make them believe that it's real. And if you have relatives that try to force you to, try to make you kowtow and teach your little kid that Santa's real, and they try to chide you if you've not done that, you just kind of don't resent them and just say that's my child and I'm not going to lie to them, and then they can let them get frustrated. You know, why would you want to lie to a child? You know, why would you tell your child a lie? Why would you break that trust? You know, little kids come into the world and they have a tendency to look at their parents as if they're gods. And then, of course, God always, those gods, you know, in the form of parents, always end up disappointing. You know, that. So why would you deliberately lie to them? So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And, and then if you get into the Krampus thing, you know, if you look that up, that's sort of the negative side of it. You know, and the Krampus figure, there are various drawings of them, of Krampus, and Krampus really looks like the devil in some cases, really it's kind of a scary looking creature. And then the idea is that if you're, you know, he comes and beats the bad kids. Same thing, you know, and then, you know, how does Krampus know? Well, somehow Krampus is all knowing, just like Santa is. You know, so it's the same kind of thing. And then to a certain extent, Christianity has even done that with God. You know, somehow God's going to punish you, or reward you for doing good and punish you for doing bad. Well, the way that actually works, that's not, you know, you really do people a disservice, because really, when it comes right down to it, we don't cast, you know, God doesn't cast us into hell, we cast ourselves into hell. You know, the problem we have is that we won't stand still, because if we would just, you know, as going back to what I was saying before, if we would just learn how to, you know, special way of being still, then God is there to correct us. But the problem is that we won't stand for the correction. We don't like to feel guilty. Don't want to be corrected. So then we, you know, the kingdom of heaven can't come through, you know, can't come into the world, you know, because the kingdom of heaven is basically the pressure that I was talking about, that inner pressure. That can't come into existence. That can't come through someone that, you know, because you block it by resenting and then being proud of it. You cut it off. You block it from happening. You end up with a mess of pottage. So, you know, the kingdom of heaven can't come into existence as long as people are blocking it off. Why would they block it off? Well, because it serves them. They want to play God. People want to know themselves as gods. Same old problem. Nothing new under the sun. So, anyhow, give me more feedback and you'll get more podcasts. That's all I can say. Now, once I go home, I'm supposed to be home by the 19th. I may get home on the 17th. I'm not sure about that. They didn't know. That's Ponca City, Oklahoma. I deliver there Thursday the 17th at 4 a.m. is the delivery time. So, you know, I may get out of there by 6 or 7 or 8. It just depends on how long it takes them to unload the load. And then I'll find out, are they going to send me just directly home from there? Because home from Ponca City, Oklahoma is probably, I looked it up, it's about 217 miles or something like that. Versus you know, if they could have some other load, and then, you know, then I would, if they had a short load or whatever, and then I could get home on the 19th, that would still be fine. Because that's the date I'm due home by. Once I make it home, there's probably not going to be that many podcasts. Just a little heads up. I'm planning on going to Oklahoma City. My youngest niece is having a baby on the 17th. That's the day that the doctor has decided to induce labor. And so I'm planning on driving over there and spending, probably a couple, 3 days anyway. I don't know exactly how long I'll be over there. And then I'll come back to my house afterwards. And then my parents are coming up from South. They're driving up from South Texas for the birth, and then they will also come to my house, and then we'll just kind of probably be at my house. I don't know if they'll stay. I'm scheduled to go back to work on January the 12th, so I don't know if they'll stay the entire time or not. Can't remember what they said. So. But, so I will be kept, you know, pretty busy, probably the entire time or most of the entire time. So, but I'll try to podcast a little bit anyway, but, feedback encourages me to podcast. It really does. That, because it's tough with no feedback. It's really tough. You know, give me the feedback and I've got the motivation. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.